you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm L.A. Gillan.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the show, we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check them out at laborradionetwork.org, where you can hear archived versions of our show, podcasted versions of this show, as well as many other labor-related podcasts out there. And so today we're going to be discussing the homelessness crisis, as well as the coming eviction crisis that is facing working people in this nation. And I'd like to start by just reading a few quotes here. The first of which is from the Economist, not necessarily a friend to workers, but they actually have a good point here, which is that the median American rent payment rose 61% in real terms between 1960 and 2016, while the median renter's income grew by only 5% in that same time. And from the Wall Street Journal, which is also another publication that is not necessarily a friend to the worker, they point out that as of July of this past year, of this year, median home prices were up 23% from last year, while incomes were only up 3%. Mortgages haven't been this unaffordable since 2008. And I think we all know what happened in 2008 with mortgages. So anyways, I bring these points up to discuss the fact, or to sort of lead into our conversation, which is that we clearly have a housing crisis in this country. And, you know, it's if you live in Portland, or if you live in any major city in this country, or if you even just sort of are aware of, you know, things that are happening in the news, you are no doubt aware of the fact that the population of houseless people in this country has exploded since the pandemic. But it was certainly growing in the time prior to that. You know, ever since the 2008 crash, the homeless population had been increasing, and our country has not done much to deal with this. And we really have not faced this in any way, and have kind of left this to be issues solved at the local levels, you know, the city and state levels, which the problem is just too big to be dealt with.
Yeah. And we're definitely going to touch on how COVID has affected this.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was a problem even before COVID, and the amount of Americans, you know, living paycheck to paycheck is, you know, honestly staggering.
Yeah.
And COVID really just kind of blew that, as we'll get into, it just blew it out of the water in that, you know, people who couldn't pay rent with a job obviously also can't pay it without a job.
Yeah.
And a lot of the rental assistance, which we'll get into, kind of, you know, that is obviously helping, but not going to solve any of these kind of systemic problems.
Exactly.
So without intervention, it really is on a course to become a huge issue.
Yeah. And so, you know, along those lines, there are the Urban Institute estimates that 10 million people are currently in danger of being evicted. And the Aspen Institute says that figure is closer to 15 million Americans. And the latest Census Bureau from the latest Census Bureau data from September reports that more than 8 million people are behind on their rent. And of those, more than 3 million said that they were very or somewhat likely to be evicted in the next 2 months. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, an estimated 2.1 million people were behind on their mortgage payments as of March of 2021.
Yeah.
So yeah, as you mentioned, like on our current trajectory, you know, really the best case scenario leaves us with 500,000 families who will be unhoused. And the worst case scenario would be more like, you know, millions of families unhoused if there is no intervention on that front. And now, you know, there is a little bit of good news, and that is that the Treasury Department, as a result of the funding packages, the emergency funding packages that were put forward at the beginning of COVID, the Treasury Department distributed the first of its $25 billion in rental assistance funds from Congress to the states in February.
Yeah.
Of this year, and the second of its $21 billion early May. So there is money that has been going out, but it is nowhere near what necessarily needs to happen in order to really intervene on this.
Yeah, and there was obviously money, not a lot, but there's money earmarked in the American Rescue Plan also tied to these things that states are allowed to distribute, which we talked about on a previous show when Oregon started distributing that money. So yeah, there has been actions.
Absolutely. And, you know, so obviously, as you mentioned, there are multiple different forms of this, and every state, because it is sort of the program of providing this rental assistance was, you know, it's a questionable design, because instead of just being a direct funding through the federal government or through the IRS to individuals, it was handed from, the money was given from the federal government to states and localities to be dealt with on their own instead of their own programs.
Yeah.
And so because of that poor design, some of the aid has not been distributed properly because, you know, for a number of different reasons, because the people involved with actually getting the money into the hands of renters and working people in need is definitely, you know, it some of those programs can be overwhelmed. And they certainly were being flooded with applications for that money. But, you know, nevertheless, like, it is definitely an indictment of our inability to help in basic ways of the people in this country that we haven't been able to get this money out there. So the process itself for putting this money, these funds out to people is overseen by the Treasury Department, but the program itself relies on about 450 other players in order to distribute that aid. And that includes state, county, and municipal governments, as well as individual charitable organizations. And many of those groups have struggled to properly launch their localized programs because they're facing challenges. You know, one of the biggest things is just finding the right staff to figure out how to make that work, as well as, you know, deciding upon the rules for how best to distribute that money. But on top of those issues, just the sheer amount of applications that they've received has created something of an administrative nightmare. And so, you know, that I think is largely to blame for why this money hasn't gone out, although there's likely also some political elements to it too, depending on which state and which, you know, political party is running each state and locality. But, you know, that's not really an issue we're going to get into right here. But basically, you know, that is to say that we probably are going to see we're probably going to see a lot of funds that were earmarked by the federal government to help people stay in their homes go unused, or at least be shifted to areas that are actually actively putting the money out versus and leaving people who are in areas that maybe need that funding as well but are not actually receiving it or not able to receive it in the lurch.
Yeah, and we talked about some of the same stuff when we talked about kind of some of the unemployment benefits that came out of the American Rescue Plan.
Yes.
So again, in a similar manner, it was kind of up to the states to distribute. The money is earmarked for those areas, but how they do it is kind of up to the state. And in certain states, right, it's much harder to stay on unemployment or maintain your benefits. Or, you know, some states are going to give, you know, larger grace periods or different things, which we'll kind of touch on. But again, I think it's just another example of these processes are slow because there's a lot that's left up to the individual states to decide.
Right.
And, you know, if your state legislature is a Republican, then in most cases it's going to kind of lean towards making these funds harder to get at.
Exactly. Yeah, and actually, you know, directly to that point, Representative Pramila Jayapal from the state of Washington told the American Prospect in a recent interview that she gave there, what we're learning is that the more barriers you put to accessing aid, well, guess what? It's harder to access the aid, which, you know, it's like they are who we thought they were. I mean, it is essentially what everyone should have expected is the case. You know, you make it so that there are more hoops you have to jump through in order to get the money. That just means that fewer people are going to be able to get that money. And that's what we're seeing. Now, luckily, the Treasury Department, in February, they issued new guidelines attempting to speed up distribution of the aid. And they suggested that applicants... They suggested allowing applicants to report their own need and allowing organizations and local governments to use proxies to replace their proof of earnings and things like that. But unfortunately, these changes were not made on a widespread basis. So some of the groups that are distributing the aid are still facing administrative challenges, while others have even declared that they've been awarded too much aid to give out, which, you know, seems counterintuitive. But so as of in September, the Treasury Department announced a follow-up to that, which is that it would make available the remaining $13 billion in aid from the second allocation from the federal government to states and local programs that are performing well. And so that means that $2.3 billion in federal emergency rental assistance went out from states and localities in August to some 420,000 households. And this, the Treasury Department is going to now release the rest of the money that they have to put out there. Now, you know, just a note on that, though, even though the amount of money that has been going out from states has increased in the last couple months and, you know, really crescendoing in August and September, it is still that to this date, just $7.7 billion in payments have actually gone out to those in need. And that, this is out of the $46 billion that was approved by Congress last year, in the beginning of this year, which means that we actually are in a situation where more than 83% of the money that was earmarked to help people stay in their homes and pay their rent has not yet been spent, has not yet gone into the hands of people who need it, which, you know, is pretty inexcusable.
Yeah.
And at a recent tenant protection event, the White House senior advisor, Gene Sperling, said that states and localities need to get out the last $16 billion in the next couple months. And that was, you know, said last month, so it really needs to happen this month and next month. But unfortunately, at the current pace, Mr. Sperling points out that the U.S. will not reach, will reach just over half of that goal. So it's not the best trajectory that we are on, unfortunately. And as I just mentioned, yeah, there are some areas that have absolutely increased the amount of funding that they are that is going out. You know, specifically some of the major cities like New York, Los Angeles, and Miami-Dade County. And together, those three areas spent more than $347 million in August, as compared to just $800,000 in May. So, you know, it is trending in the right direction, but there are more than a dozen state programs that have still spent less than 10% of their rental assistance funds. And at least six state programs, including Arizona and South Carolina, that have still distributed less than 5% of the aid that they've received. Yeah. Because of this, the slow progress of getting this money out, and in, you know, some instances just outright obfuscation and not wanting to get the money out, it seems, the Treasury Department has now announced plans to reclaim funds from groups that have insufficiently spent their allocations in order to redistribute it back to communities that are in greater need. So basically funds can now be reclaimed from programs that have allocated less than 65% of their allotments.
And we'll touch on it, I think, more in the show, but I think that that's ultimately the right move, but it also doesn't really address all of the problems. I think one of the big things that we're seeing with these rent assistance programs kind of across the country is that those who don't really need it as much are much more easily able to access it than those who are not.
Yes.
Take our state of Oregon, for example. There's multiple counties outside of Salem that are more rural in nature and also have some of the most highly populated or highest percentage of folks inside of a county who are applying to these programs, whose work has been affected the most. And, you know, for them, low access to Wi-Fi and incredibly complex applications have, on top of a lot of these administrative challenges, led to just smaller amounts of people applying. And so you can take a look at the county data, and it really shows that, you know, there are more people kind of per capita in these different areas, like getting in front of applications, who, based on their socioeconomic status, don't actually really need to be, you know, you would expect based on socioeconomic status of different counties that there be different application rates.
Yeah.
And the counties that we would expect to see the highest amount of applications, we actually see less than some of these counties that we would assume wouldn't.
That's interesting.
And it's a lot of the reason is due to also how difficult it can be to apply for these programs, which, again, we touched on very similarly in the unemployment episodes that we've done, just because a lot of times it's hard to get at this money. And it's not even just administrative stuff, which is also there. It's, you know, how exactly does a person do this? Or are they even aware that the program exists? Because I don't think that there's been a really, cohesive strategy to get the news out there.
Yeah.
So unless you're paying attention, or, you know, you're a frequent visitor of Oregon.gov.
As we all are.
Then a lot of times you aren't even aware of what's available to you.
Right. No, that's an incredibly important point, because, I mean, like you said, in a similar way that, you know, early on in the pandemic moment, like there was a lot of misinformation, but also just a lack of like coherent and direct information coming from trusted sources. That's true with this too. Yeah, like this information was not made available to people necessarily, unless, as you said, you really sought it out. And, you know, if it, you'd have to imagine that if someone is struggling to pay rent and they to the point where they need to receive funds from the federal government, they're likely also struggling to pay for other things. Yeah. And maybe some things have to be nixed off of what they pay for, such as like Wi-Fi. And, yeah.
And also, right, if you don't have the money to pay rent in April of 2020 and you apply for $12,000, you don't have the money to pay it back.
Exactly.
In October of 2021.
Yeah.
And so when we actually think about a lot of these issues, we're really just pushing off the problem that is our economy kind of taking a hit and people who were already on, you know, up against that line kind of paying for it.
Yeah.
And I think we saw this across, I mean, you could, there's a myriad of I would argue similar looking situations. The number one being our supply chain.
Yes.
Right? Like we existed in this perpetual state of just in time supply chain. And we also existed in this perpetual state of just in time rent payment and just in time medical payment and just in time food payment, right?
Yeah.
And absolutely. So when you took these things away from people, the system very quickly collapsed.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And we're, you know, we saw that as you're mentioning, like not only in people's inability to be able to stay in their homes or, you know, without assistance, but also in their ability to get basic needs filled. And, you know, we've talked many times in the show about the impact that that type of structure for society has had on working people and in terms of like their employment. But now we're seeing it on the other side in terms of their just basic needs being met by where they're going to live, the shelter they live in. And so it is really, I think, an indictment, as you're pointing to. It is an indictment of our larger, the larger system. And so if you are just joining us, this is Labor Radio, and we are discussing the coming eviction crisis that has that is sure to break over the shores of this country soon, as well as, you know, the rental crisis and the mortgage crisis that is facing working people in this country.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been talking a lot about from a federal level kind of what's going on. But I think a lot of folks who are scared, let's get into what you can do.
Right. Yes.
Obviously, being at KBOO, this is an Oregon-focused kind of radio show. But obviously, a lot of these tips that we're going to give out, you could do in your local communities. But for Oregon specifically, let's talk about what's going on for people who are nervous about paying rent. So the first thing that I'll say is that there are two pieces of state legislature that have gone through that are going to help. The first is Senate Bill 282. Which actually extended the grace period for paying rents incurred between April 1st, 2020 and June 30th, 2021 out to February 28th of 2022. And so what that means is that rent that you have back payment due, you have an extended grace period after the federal mandates have ended in July. So while that doesn't save you, it does at least allow you to tread water in the meantime while, and again, I'm not sure how a family, or a single parent household or a family of four who doesn't have the money now is miraculously gonna have the money in February. However, it does extend that deadline. So with the federal eviction moratorium ending, yeah. Obviously in July, as everyone who lives in a home now knows, you are obviously having to pay rent. But rents occur that basically you accrued during April to June of 2020 to 2021, you have extended time to figure that out. So that's number one. So if you have a landlord who's coming to you for that and you're in the state of Oregon, you can reference this Senate Bill 282. The second is Senate Bill 278, which sets a 60-day safe harbor period for renters and tenants who can show proof of application to the Oregon Renters Assistance Program. And why this is really important is because just like we've talked about, getting in these programs can take some time. And so what you want to do is you want to make sure that when you apply to these programs, you maintain proof. And then again, that gives you safe harbor. In addition to that, in Multnomah County, there was an additional 30 days added to that safe harbor. So if you are in Portland or Multnomah County more specifically, then you actually have a 90-day safe harbor, which is really great. I do want to pause here and just talk a little bit about kind of the hypocrisy that's going on in that because our assistance programs are not moving fast enough to keep up with the timeline that the legislative protections have created, people are getting stuck in these really dangerous situations where even though there's the safe harbor policy, a lot of times it's taking longer than 60 or 90 days to start getting your assistance or even be to even be made aware that you've been denied, right? So as long as you're applying, it is important to understand that. The other thing that I will say to be careful about is that landlords a lot of times are negotiating with people who don't have legal representations out of their homes, even if they should have access to rental assistance. So, you know, tenants are failing to appear at court hearings, or they're just making deals or, you know, agreements with landlords without knowing what's going into it. And they're even losing or signing away their protections that the state and federal governments are giving them. So I think it's really important to step back and kind of figure out in whatever county you're in, kind of what is afforded to you before kind of stepping into some sort of agreement with your landlord. The other thing that I'll say is in Portland specifically, the Portland Housing Bureau in August of this year launched a eviction legal defense program, which you can apply for at portland.gov/PHB. And that is really important because if you are not aware of kind of all of the legal standings, or, you know, if you've received a termination notice and you're not quite sure how to deal with it, or an eviction notice, excuse me, they're going to help you kind of walk through all of those things. And in some cases, even, you know, appear with you in court if that's what requires. So again, portland.gov/PHB is a really great resource. And so obviously we're not an official source for your legal protection.
Yeah.
But I will say it's very important to understand what resources you have available. And obviously we've been focused on the greater Portland area. But regardless of where you are, I would say please do as much research as you can on tenant resources in your area. The better you know kind of what's available to you, the easier it will be to get started in the case of something coming up. And again, like we've mentioned, by not solving a lot of these systemic issues, these problems are going to continue to pop up for you, especially in kind of larger, like single family or just low income situations. So obviously, like I mentioned, you can visit portland.gov. But for the rest of Oregon, I think it's important to go to oregon.gov/OHCS. Again, that's oregon.gov/OHCS, which is the Oregon Housing and Community Services website. And they have both actually tenant and landlord resources, which you can take a look at. So in particular, they have FAQs around, hey, I've been handed an eviction notice. What are my options? And they can walk you through the steps that are available.
That's excellent. That is all incredibly important news, especially because, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, like the eviction moratorium itself is probably not coming back. You know, it expired in July and then was reinstated for about a month by the CDC before it was struck down by the Supreme Court. And so despite the fact that like Congress could reinstate it at a federal level, a federal eviction moratorium, it is likely they don't seem to be moving on it. It's
and like I, you know, we've been talking the whole episode about how slow things are going, and the Oregon Emergency Rental Assistance Program, which kicked off in July, has gotten off to an even slower start than they thought. And like I mentioned, because of these Wi-Fi issues, there was an article in the Salem Register that was talking about how the application when printed out is 26 pages long, over 26 pages long. And right now, the Oregon Emergency Rental Assistance Program, the average payment to each household in the Salem area has been between $7,000 and $7,500. And they've even seen requests up to $15,000 and $20,000. Oh, so again, like we're talking about people who aren't just unable to pay next month's rent, they also aren't able to pay all of last year's rent for obvious reasons.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, as you said, like there are other bills that people are having to pay and balance between. So of course, if you're not able to pay this month's rent and you're not able to pay next month's rent, you're not gonna be able to pay it back later. And you're also gonna be behind on other things like maybe Wi-Fi and making it just more difficult to access any of these resources on your own.
Yeah. And the other thing too is it's really important to call out, you know, in across Oregon, in Salem and I think I saw as well in Eugene, there's a lot of community activist groups in different areas across Oregon where you can apply for assistance with legal defense. And a lot of times these community organizations can help open the door for you registering for other programs you weren't aware of. There are a lot of additional assistance programs that are only offered to low-income families. Right. So perhaps you don't qualify for that, but you do for maybe the, you know, Oregon Emergency Rental Assistance Program. So really, again, it's important to just kind of do as much research as you can, so that you don't kind of walk yourself into a corner and not know your options when the time comes. Because if you are in that situation, and I think there are many of us that are, you know that at some point it'll come.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you are listening to this and you are not in the Portland or Oregon area, and you are still looking for resources on that, I mean, obviously your city government website and your state government website, but even if you were to just contact your congressperson's office and ask for help finding those resources, that would be a good start for that.
Exactly.
And yeah, and so, you know, obviously this is an issue that is outside of just Oregon. It is a national issue. And of course it does, you know, as much as cities and localities can do, it does have to be dealt with on a national level in order to make sure that it is comprehensive and can be implemented equally across, you know, all the different states. And so, yeah, in the 3 months since the moratorium, or sorry, the you know, slightly over 2 months since the eviction moratorium was struck down by the Supreme Court, Congress has really done little to act to try and reinstate it. So it seems pretty clear that will not be a priority for them. However, there are three critical bills that have been introduced by progressive members of Congress that could take up these issues directly and improve the situation for people facing eviction or facing a rent crisis. The first of which is the Keeping Renters Safe bill, which was introduced by Representative Cori Bush and Senator Elizabeth Warren. And it basically aims to protect renters from eviction and curb the spread of COVID-19 by amending Section 361 of the Public Health Services Act to grant permanent authority of the Department of Health and Human Services to implement residential eviction moratorium and to address, or in order to address, public health crises, which is essentially what the CDC did before the Supreme Court struck it down. And so that would essentially allow for, as long as COVID is a public health crisis, the CDC to say that people should not be evicted from their homes because it would create a further public health crisis. There's also the Rent and Mortgage Cancellation Act that was introduced by Representative Ilhan Omar, which would provide concrete assistance for people who can't pay their back rent or back mortgage payments. And that would provide eviction and rent moratoriums to help them in the immediate, but only, that would basically address the problem that eviction and rent moratoriums only help in the immediate, but then just delay the inevitable.
Yeah, the moratoriums push it off. This would address the underlying kind of difference in payment that is not going to be caught up on.
Yeah, it would just basically waive the need to pay that back.
Yeah, unless someone invents the next Facebook, most like they are going to owe the same amount of rent that they did in February that they do right now.
Yeah, unless they own their own private island or something like that. Yes. Yeah, they own their own country. And the third bill that is extremely important as well is the Housing is a Human Rights Act, which was introduced by Representatives Pramila Jayapal as well as Grace Meng, which directly addresses our long-term housing crisis for lower-income Americans by funding more affordable housing and support services. So it would provide more than $300 billion for crucial housing infrastructure while increasing affordable housing and reducing homelessness. So those are three really concrete and effective means of addressing, from, you know, a three-pronged approach, addressing the housing and mortgage crisis that is facing, you know, the rent and mortgage crisis that is facing many people, as well as sort of putting our economy and our society on a better footing moving forward to keep people in their homes and keep them safe. And although we haven't seen the wave, the tsunami of evictions that has been foretold yet really crash across the country, you know it's coming.
It's coming,
It's only been,
And it's really not treated this way. I mean, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to give it, follow up with this comment with enough justice that it deserves, but, you know, it's not treated this way, but housing really is closing in and ought to be a human right.
Yes.
The same way we talk about healthcare and some of these other things.
Absolutely.
And it's just absolutely not treated that way. And obviously we don't have time to dive into that philosophical question deeper, but, you know, ultimately I think Americans need to be aware of what's going on and they need to, you know, address the housing crisis with the kind of gravity that it deserves.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like, we can't experience our full humanity and dignity without having a home. And so it really is kind of the fundamental bedrock for building a a society. And so you should really reach out to your congresspeople and encourage them to support and to push for the votes on these bills, because that is what we need to do moving forward to save this country, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that is all the time we have. Thank you so much for tuning in to Labor Radio. Again, I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
And we will be back with you next month. Have a great evening.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we are very, very honored to have with us three individuals who